just want to welcome Kevin Imhoff.
Very good. I like moving around. Got it? Said I don't yell as much as Mitch. The reason Mitch isn't here today is that I know more stories about him than you'd want to know. So that's why he didn't want to be in the building. So I figured tomorrow at church when I'm teaching, yeah, I'd be nice, but I don't necessarily have to be real nice. One of the challenges that I see in doing something like this is there's such a broad range of challenges that people are facing. And so today when I've been planning for teaching for you guys in the last several months is what is the primary challenge that people have faced the last 6 or 7 months? And without a doubt, fear is off the chart. It's, you know, if there's a spirit of control, but there is a spirit of fear, that people are fear of losing everything from their job and every aspect. And we just went through the worst 10-year history in the market ever. The worst 10-year. Last year was the worst year in the stock since 1931. You see, when you start going back to depression area type things, it's like, how do you move through it? How do you get through one of the worst economic times ever? And what is your source? So that's the base on it. In the presentation, I have an outline all laid out, but I'm also here to do a presentation for you. So I'm planning on, if you have a question, to stop and say, if you don't quite understand, we can go over it. I tried to bring a lot of different visuals. And the goal is if you can take away one or two or three things, and there's from this to start a foundation to build on to move forward, that's what we want to do. Okay? So if you want to go ahead, Jonathan, is this echoing back a lot, or is it echoing to you? Okay. Maybe if I stand behind these. No, I get a little echo in the back. Okay. The first part of the life lesson, moving through fear and loss, is how do you do that? How do you actually move through fear and loss? And who do you turn to? What do you do and where do you go? So, I mean, here we're at a church-type setting in a shopping mall complex. Where do you go for help? I mean, where do you go? Do you go to your father? Anyone go to their parents for advice? Anyone ask have you talked to anyone that went through the Great Depression? Right. So how do you move out of fear and loss? And I specifically tried to make this presentation today where I just wanted to kind of talk to you and say, how do we make the Bible real? How do we make it make sense for today? And if I do anything different, it's not just about the math and numbers. Math and numbers is absolutely simple and easy. There's money coming in, money going out. There's either a plus or a negative. That is simple. That is the easiest part. What I want to talk about and what I try to build my practice around is the impact on your heart. What's the impact? What the values are. And there's two Bible verses that really stood out to me. It's 2 Timothy 1:7. I'm going to give you just two verses. You might even be able to quote it yourself. 2 Timothy 1:7 says, "For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind." Right? Would you agree? And why are we so fearful? Why are we so lost? Why are we so confused? Is anyone hurting? Come on. I just came out like the two worst years of my life. Betrayal. Betrayal from those that love you. From the church, from institutions, from corporations. On here, I have not been very good of not living that verse. And really, maybe another way to say, I'm not understanding it. And then so that's one verse I want to kind of put aside and say, is there wisdom? If you didn't believe in this God thing, is there wisdom in saying that I want to have a spirit of, it's not good to have a spirit of fear, but I need to be powerful and of a loving spirit and of a sound mind? That would make logic whether you're an atheist or Hindu or Muslim, whatever, right? So the other verse I wanted to stand on or just look at was Romans 8:15. For it says, "For you did not receive the spirit of bondage again to what? To fear." So it says, "But you receive the spirit of adoption by whom we cry out, Abba, Father." For you did not receive the spirit of bondage again. So what that tells me is that we started out in our human nature as fearful people. Go to Genesis 27. It says, do not be afraid. He's talking to Jacob on here. So all through here, I just want to say is that our inner nature is designed to look at fear first. And I want to try and give you some tools and some ideas and some concepts. Literally that you can walk away from here today and say, you know what? I don't remember most of what he said, but there's one visual that I really like, and I'm going to try and do one thing on here. So is that a good start? So how do you do that? We're going to try and get that. And who do we turn to? We're going to be trying to get answers for all those. The second thing I really want to emphasize this morning is, what is the source of your information that you're getting? Where do you get your primary source of information? News? Newspaper? Come on. Friends, neighbors, there's one even worse than all that. Internet. And see, because of the freedom of speech, doesn't mean it has to be accurate. You can tell absolute garbage on the media, on the news, and they can stand on the freedom of speech, and doesn't have to be accurate legally or binding. So if that is our primary source of information and data, I challenge you to unplug the primary source that you've used, because if we're walking in fear and walking in challenge, I mean, it's like, let me just keep moving on. If you're fearful about the economy, because you cannot exist without having something horrible happen in the news and the market. I literally stopped watching the market. I figured at one point that the market kind of likes it at 8,000, the Dow at 8,000, because there's absolute garbage coming out and it still stays at 8,000. I mean, the worst unemployment, the worst this, worst that, worst that, and it stays at 8,000. Something's going to happen. It'll break up and go to 10,000. I don't know when, but it's going to happen. So how much can you control of that information? None. And most of the things we worried about. How many people worried about when gas was a barrel was $147 a barrel, and I paid $4.50 a gallon for my car? How many people care about the price of gas today? Me? Right now, today, right? It's $1.87 or something, $1.78. So here it was. We're always worried about what was devastating, and really concentrate. What do we plug our source into? And because we have an inner nature to be fearful, you have to unplug, step back, unplug what we've been listening to and say, you know what, maybe that's not the right source that I was created to plug into. Maybe that's not the right source. I mean, it's important to be informative. Absolutely, to discern between the BS and the real truth. Is that important? Absolutely. Is discernment important? But consider the source of where you're getting your information. You know, and part of the reason why I didn't want to send, you know, my bio to Susan is I just don't even like the idea of bragging. I mean, you know, how can you brag about the market if you have more money in your accounts today than you did 10 years ago? You have a brilliant financial advisor. You know, and but that doesn't make me feel good. So, you know, that's why I wanted to move. How can I move forward? How can I plug in the right source? Where does God want me to move forward? What is the value base I can teach people? So, and then the last key point on here, has anyone ever dreamed of going to Hawaii? Has anyone ever been here to Hawaii? Have you ever been to Hawaii? I mean, did you go to Maui, Kona, or the Big Island? Which island did you go to? Hawaii? Okay. Have you ever dreamed of going to Hawaii? I mean, it is, if God allows you to live long enough, you need to go to that spot in the world because it is off the chart. You know, Ruth and I used to go every year for a number of years on it. And so we love getting to Hawaii, but guess what we didn't love? Is the plane flight. I mean, from Chicago, a direct flight is like 8.5 hours. So we used to try and break it up on it. But imagine this. You've planned your dream vacation, you've planned your whole life to get to this certain point, and you're about ready to go off to the dream paradise and the islands. Can you just see the 82-degree water and the 75, 80-degree weather all the time? When you wake up in the morning, you go at night, it's the same temperature. It's always sunny. It's brilliant. It's the smells. It's just wonderful. And you're excited, and you're packed, and you don't have to wear like 4 layers of clothes and everything, and you got just your shorts and your sandals and your T-shirts, and you're ready just to hang out, hang loose. You get on the plane, and you're just all excited about the dream of flying and you're getting there. And you get about 5 hours into the flight, and you're over past California, and about 3 hours from the island, if you look on this map, Hawaii is so tiny, you can't even see it out there. I mean, it's like way out there. Could you imagine, you're flying, and the pilot comes on and goes, just want to inform you is that my co-pilot just informed me that we are 1 degree off our flight plan, and we are going to crash into the Pacific Ocean in about 2.5 hours, so prepare for a crash landing. Thank you very much. Okay. Is that acceptable? I would have to say there's just something not right with that. Because, I mean, it's just a little tiny piece of dirt that's out of the water, a little tiny bit, and you can't see anything else out there. And see, what happens is most of us live our life like that. You're off 1 degree, and you're going to have a crash landing sometime. So my goal is, if I can help readjust and move you 1 degree off or 1 degree on, we can start moving forward and move through. And that is the theme that I've had the last 6 months, is how do we move through it? And today we're going to move through another level of life. All right? So, okay, Jonathan, let's go to the next slide. These are the three key questions when someone comes in I'll be in my office and I'll be, be sitting here. And before someone, my staff will come up and they'll I'm sitting at my desk and they'll say, Kevin, your clients are here. And I'll just say, okay, Lord, I need a little wisdom for this next one. What do they want? Where is their heart at? And how can I help them? So, I mean, this is my preparation for every person that comes into my office. Because I'm not here just to do them, look at their numbers. I'm not here just to sell them something. I'm here literally to change their life, to get them on track that 1 degree. And that 1 degree might make the difference between landing in eternity or landing in hell. Just 1 degree. To give people hope and direction. So let's go ahead and move forward and say, what's the next slide, please? Okay. So, and again, on this presentation, I purposely did not bring like a 20 or 30, 40, 50 page. This is like 50-some pages, 50 slides. I did not bring that because I wanted you to really try and absorb what I'm saying. Just try, and if there's a question that stands out, write the one question down. So, I wanted this to say, is there one thing that he said or is doing that applies to my life at this minute, at 9:20 a.m. on Saturday morning? Is there something that applies today on the challenges that I'm facing? Does anyone have any challenges they're facing on Monday? Any challenges they're facing on, the end of the month and the bill? So that's where I want to look at. So what's the most pressing issue in your life today? Just, again, as I'm going through, what's the most pressing issue in your life? Is there anything that stands out? Anything?
Job.
Is it going to be here? Backup, what? Lack of money. Pressing issues. I mean, you've got them. See, I'm taking you down I lead with questions down a point, a path, to a very specific area, which is helping you identify a key question that's coming up. So what's the most pressing issue in your life? What's your greatest fear? Does anyone have any great fears? Children's future? Fears? Anyone have any fears? Pardon? Heights? Fear of heights? Yeah. I should step back since you're getting out with my type of teaching. There's three different styles of teaching. There's lecture-based teaching, where I talk and you listen. There's interactive teaching, which is I ask a question, you respond back. And the third is what I call impact teaching, which my whole purpose is just to irritate you. Really, because I was trying to find out what is your hot buttons. What is your value basis that's just really maybe messed up or not messed up. I was going to bring a keg of beer instead of keg of beer up there, and I said, I worry about, oh my goodness, I don't even drink beer. I'd be careless about it. But there's people that drink beer and go to heaven. It doesn't matter to me, but I thought there's something. That's what I call impact, of what's going to just get you riled up to move forward, to move through. So what's your greatest fear? Does anyone here have cancer? You know, if you've got cancer, it's something to be fearful. You know, is that, you know, how do you move through it? I mean, so what's a pressing issue? What's your greatest fear? What do you worry about losing? House? Health? Oh, my goodness. Is that a big one? You know, there was a season in my life where I was losing my sight. I was going blind, had to have radiation treatments, couldn't go blind. 38 years old. Doctors, I sat there, and he gave us a big pile of mumbo-jumbo. He said, Doc, I don't understand a single word you just said. And he said, if this doesn't work, you will go blind. It's like, I couldn't move, couldn't breathe, couldn't talk. I understood that part. See, I worried about losing that for a little bit. So what do you worry about losing? What? Mobility. Oh, my goodness. You're not thankful for what you have until you can't do something like get in your car and out of your car and, you know, go potty and stuff like that. So very, very interesting questions. Because you got everyone telling you what to think and what to focus on and what to see, and all the politicians arguing about this and that, and the institutions all messing up, and everyone fighting over what are you worried about? Don't let your worries be what someone else planted in you. How about worry about your kids going to heaven? How about you going to heaven? How about you worrying about losing your spouse because you don't treat her right? You're losing your car. So again, let's keep moving. Next slide. What is important to you and who is important to you? Again, real basic questions, but I'm. What's important? These are value-based questions. I mean, to really stop and look at it. Doing the right thing. What's important to you? This question on here, that why I put up here, is it's the point of this question is people don't know what's important. They don't know what your values are. If I used to teach a class and say, you know, write down your 6 primary values, what you think they are, and I'd put a list of 100 different types of values and virtues up on the screen, and they'd get done, and they'd say, tell me what my values are. I mean, I'm telling you, I've taught for 20 years. You know, 32 years in business, I've taught for 20, and people don't know what their values are. So what's important to you? Freedom, faith, family, relationships, health, career. Those 6 are big ones on there. Sense of security, that would fall into one of those on there. Who is important to you? Your family is important to you. How much time do you spend with them? So those are some issues on it. And then this next question starts saying, what do you love doing? Usually if you love doing, that's a sign of something that what you want to move through to, right? So what do you love doing? So if you're, the first few questions are dealing with your past. Now this is like, let's start looking for it. What do I love doing? And then what are some of your hidden dreams? Do you have any dreams that you put aside because the economy is doing what it's doing? What are the dreams that God put in you? What are the dreams that creation put in you? What are they? What were you created to do? What are you created to be on there? What is your purpose? What is that? You see, those are important things on how do you move through stuff. If you don't know where you're at and you don't know where you're going, it really doesn't matter. So I'm going to try and point you in a direction. Next. The law of justification says this. People make decisions emotionally and defend them logically, emotionally, spiritually, and relationally. So I've asked you questions. What do you want? What do you want? What do you want? And I'm going to take it to another level of understanding. Because this is very, very important, the law of justification on here. And go ahead, next slide. So the lesser, which is this, the L-E-S-R, lesser, logical, emotional, spiritual, and relational, on here. The logical is help me understand the numbers. So if someone comes in to talk to me, they want to know what the math is. The math's pretty simple. I can teach my son at 10 years old knew what math was. And he could tell it was, you know, if I gave a pile of beans, like coins this big or candy this big and a pile this big and say, which pile do you want? And he'd pick the bigger pile. I mean, the math is the math. The second thing is emotional. Help me feel better. If I'm talking to you logically and your feelings are all messed up, I'm not on the same communication level and I'm not going to relate to you, and it won't make a difference. this principle, if you take this one principle and add it to everything that we're doing from this point on, then this will change your life and how you view every single thing. When you look at the third part on it, spiritual, how does God fit into this? And I tell you, I've been doing what I've been doing for a long time, and I've dealt with death and divorce and children having leukemia and people dying of prostate cancer, 53-year-olds dying, my best friends. So I know this people, what they are when they face death and they turn to something. They want to know more. So how does God fit into this? In anything that we do, how does God fit into this job thing that we're at? The fourth thing is relationally. How does this impact my relationships? So if you take this concept, the logical, the emotional, the spiritual, relational, and we add now, if I ask you a question, it's going to be people want answers in these 4 years. I'm telling you, this is one of the principles that I taught that they gave my honorary doctorate. They had never seen anyone teach this concept, and you can apply it to everything. Look at your job. Logically, help me understand the numbers. If you lose your job, or I had a gentleman call me yesterday. They cut him down from 5 days a week to 4 days a week, and they gave an across-the-board 5% pay cuts to everyone in the dealership. That is a numbers issue, right? So if you, with your job, there's the numbers. There's so many dollars coming and going out. Emotional, how does it make you feel when you lose income? Yeah. Makes you feel bad for somehow. And then spiritually, well, where is God? Where is, you know, we can get mad and pull the blame card out. Where is God? Why would God allow me? I tithe. I do this. I go to church. I serve. I do this. You know, God could, he doesn't care about that. You know, stay with me on here. He cares, but he cares more about you getting to have a relationship with him. And here's an interesting concept. If money were the answer, what is there, 4.5-5 billion people on the planet? And 90% of them are poor? And if money is the answer, there's something screwed up with that concept. So there's another level. And relationally, how does this, if you lose your job, how does this impact your spouse? Okay, I'll tell the young man that came to me yesterday, his wife is due in June for their third child. Okay, women, tell me, how would you feel? Husband comes home, you're cutting out 4 days a week, and you got a pay cut of 5%. What can't you already do on your present income? Barely make the bills, right? So that concept on there is, again, you can add it to anything, any area of abortion, whether you're for abortion or not for abortion. I mean, there's a moral issue on that. Abortion, if you take the math out of the abortion, take the finance and the dollars out of it, it'll change the impact on whether people do abortions out there. Emotionally, if how does it make a person feel if they lose a child? Because it's a woman's choice or it's a right to life. How well has that done the last 30 years? Not very well. Is there not the right focus? Spiritually, I'm here to tell you, if a man loved a woman the way that God created a man to love a woman would be honored to give birth to her husband's child. So it's more maybe a spiritual issue. And the same thing in the relationship part of it. So again, you can add this concept, this principle, to any area. So next slide. So now if we ask, what do you want? And you ask the lesser question to it. And I'm going to try and narrow it down to the financial, since this is supposed to be a financial presentation on dollars and cents. So what do you want logically? If you have your wallets and your purses, grab your wallet and your purse and just pull it off with me. This is not an offering on here. Okay. So if you just look in your purse or your checkbook, pull out your checkbook. I mean, literally do this. You need to take a look at this. Because if I ask you, what do you want? You know, I still like this. You know what this is? It's $1 bills. It's the same as one of these. Can you see what that is? Can you see what that is? In the back, can you see? It's 100. This is 100, and this is 100 $1 coins. So if you ask, what do you want, logically, does anyone here want more money? How much more? No. It's. Can you give me the specific number? Do you want, is it $5,000 a month? You know, millions? We're going to get to that in a second. Is it $3,000 a month? Is it $2,500 a month? $50,000 a year? What does that mean to you? Is it $3,000 a month? Is it $2,000 a month? Is it $1,500 a month? I'm raising a boy from Africa. When he came here, he was orphaned at 14. We took him in when he was 17. He's 19 years old. I'm here to tell you, money is not a big deal for him. He likes having food in his belly. He likes clothes and shoes. You know, so logically, so if you sit down here, if there's one thing I'd like you to do financially, take this one slide, these questions, and say, what did that Imhoff guy say? What did he do? I mean, you look at your wallet again. Do you want more of these? And the question is, yes, how many more? And at what point does these become a burden? Okay? What I find is the more of these I have, the more problems and challenges I seem to have. I mean, if you had no money in the market, guess how much you lost? None. If you have no money, it doesn't make any difference. You know, so, and then emotionally, and that goes back to, emotionally is what part of the equation? I want to feel what? Better. How much money do you need to feel better, to live comfortable? How much is that?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So those, see what she just did on here, she went from the emotional, which is, she talked about stability and security, that's what women are founded in, and then she talks about her kids on there, which is a relationship side of it, don't want them to be dependent, you don't want to be dependent upon them. Very, very good point on it. So how, what does it take to get to that point? Okay, and see, here's another question, how to stop worrying about it. If you were diagnosed, I had one of my close friends had breast cancer, and then went in remission. She came back, and the doctor said she had 90 days to live. She died 93 days after. She died. Okay, so she died 93 days after her 90-day death sentence. She lived long enough to see her second grandchild born. She was 53 years old. She was my wife's best friend. Her husband was my best friend. He's 55 years old and widowed, and I just helped him retire February 2nd. Why? Because the numbers aren't the most important thing in his life. So, again, let's live. See, one of the fears that we have is if we're not focused in the minute, then we lose a lot of living and allow a life that God intended us to live and enjoy. So you have to, and that's because the world is saying we're all falling apart. And I'm looking at it, so this is the greatest opportunity that God's ever given. This is the greatest opportunity for God to be glorified. This should be the separation. This is a sign of the times. This is a sign of Scripture. There's going to be a great separation from those who call themselves of God and those that are what I call the facade of God, the Pharisees of God. There's going to be a great separation. You cannot stop the prophecy of the Word of God because it's here. So how do we start living? Again, what do you want emotionally? To feel better, to feel secure. There is a dollar amount that make you feel secure. There is. If I, oh Lord, how am I going to do this? I have a lot of stuff to cover. Old-fashioned training. I've been around the block a long, long time. They used to say, teach people how to save hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars, save millions of dollars, build a big pile of net worth. That was the planning training that they gave me. And the problem with that is that the value could get cut in half or third or drop significantly over a five-day window period. The market drops 25%. So a lifetime of planning fades in 5 days. You know, 100 hours, it fades. A lifetime of planning evaporates in 100 hours. So I... Oh, Lord. The planning that I do today is about income management. If I can create a guaranteed income stream of $5,000 a month, $3,000 a month, $7,000 a month, $10,000 a month, would that be, and for the rest of your life, guaranteed? You wouldn't like that? $5,000, $7,000, $8,000, $10,000 a month of guaranteed income? That's the life, that's the focus I'm on, income planning versus net worth building. So that's the difference on it. And then, you know, the thing, I mean, let me jump back up to number things. You know, these things here, these credit card things. You know, debt. The whole way that banking finances credit is going to be, it's totally changed. Absolutely changed without a doubt. How about, would anyone want to get out of debt? Credit card debt. And stay out of debt forever. See, pay off your home. you know, those kinds of things. That changes. We've got, for those that need plastic surgery, we've got up here, Susan's got the scissors and stuff. And I want you to take a step to say, I want to make a commitment to become debt free, to move forward. I mean, one thing you want to teach your children, how to become debt free. Because if you don't, guess who's going to come back and ask for money when they're 20, 30, 40, 50, 60. I have 60-year-olds asking their parents for money. 60-year-olds. Not good. Spiritually, again, on the logical side of it, there's a lot of verses in the Bible about money. Big, big topic. Because that is what ties your heart to the world. Yes?
You're talking about cutting up your credit card. In some circumstances, to make reservations.
No, I'm not saying cut up your... If most people have 8 credit cards, I've had people come into my office that have 30, 40, 50 credit cards with balances on them. So I had a doctor made $200,000. He had $200,000 on credit cards on 57 credit cards. So it's not. I have no problem with credit. I have a problem with poor use of credit. Okay. So I have credit cards, but some of my credit cards are paid off. So I mean. That's not a problem with that. The thing is, how many people here like getting a credit card payment, a bill, and it's 25% interest and you can't make the minimum payments? That is bondage. That is bondage. You say, well, you know, self-inflicted bondage is not healthy because it gives up your freedom and your choices. So again, I'm not a Dave Ramsey, throw away your credit cards, it's worthless kind of concept. I'm not that concept. So I have a problem with misuse of credit. I have a problem with using bad credit to pay off good things. You know, credit card debt to pay a house payment, that's bad. I've seen people do that. Credit cards to buy food, that's bad. So, again, these questions I hear mostly spiritually. Where does God fit in the equations? Now, so if bad things happen to you that you think are bad because it's a money issue, then why is it the first thing that I do is blame God? Did you hear what I said? Why do I blame God when I don't get what I want? Well, it's just that spirit of fear is in me. I mean, I'm controlling. Again, we're all, you can, again, fill in the blank with your name on there. So there is a God thing here trying to teach us a lesson. And two key words I'd say that you can embrace is humility and thankfulness is what God's looking for. I'm just going to bypass a bunch of stuff. Humility and thankfulness is what God's looking for, what your wife's looking for, what your children are looking for, what your employer's looking for. What your clientele is looking for is humility and thankfulness. Right? Okay. And then relationally, what do you want relationally? You talk about not having your kids take care of you in the future. There is actually, you can buy policies that can help provide income to make sure that you have dignity in your future. There's ways to protect yourself with insurances and savings and a plan and all that stuff. So there is a process. This question, what do you want? What do you want? What do you want? Use this principle to it on here. All right. As one of the things up here on here that I wanted to, I brought my collector Spider-Man guy here. What happens is what the world does, they turn to a superhero to help them. Who's the super smart guy that's going to help you get out of this problem? Who's the superhero that's going to step between you and your problem? Who is your superhero? Who is your wife's superhero? Who is your kid's superhero? And the other thing when it comes to this God thing, we do is we get out our Aladdin's lamp and blow off the dust and start, come on, baby, where are you? Come on, God, come on, I got a wish that I commanded the man on here. And see what? Most of our relationship with God is either the superhero or he's the genie in a bottle or he's some magical thing. And, my blue diamond on there is really a representation of the Word of God. If there's a foundation that you need to build on that I've seen after all my years of half a century here, there's a foundation that the superhero you need to become, that superhero that God created you to become. We're turning to the wrong sources on here. Next slide. All right. Here's a very, very fun one. I like doing this one. This one, if you want to, there's 6 questions to... There's 6 questions that I can actually help you define your purpose in life. Does anyone read Rick Warren's stuff? Purpose-driven life. Okay, I'm going to help you find what your purpose is. What would you do if you're given $1,000 right now today? They're going to give away $100 today. What would you do if you're given $1,000 today? What would you do with that money right now? Quick.
Bills.
What bills?
The ones to keep your house going.
Okay.
Your lights.
So how much is that?
Well, it would just about take care of $1,000.
Okay, that's done. Pay the bills. Anything else? Oh, and I hear, because we're in a church thing, we're going to do it. I've already done the God thing. I've taken out your tithe and your taxes. Your patriotism and your Christianity have been taken care of. This is your after tax, after patriotic duties, responsibilities. This is for you. $1,000. What would you do? Pay bills? Pay bills? You would go to vacation. Where would you go? Where would you go? He's paying bills. Are you guys? That would get, okay, that wouldn't quite even get a ticket and a half. So she goes there with no place to stay, just in the Maui airport. Yeah. Okay, so anyone excited about $1,000? $10,000. What did you do for next slide? Oh, you didn't do it? Okay, the next slide on here, we should say, if you don't go to the next slide now. Okay, so on here, what would you do if you're given $10,000? If I was giving away $10,000 a day, what would you do with it? Quick. How much do you own your truck? It's $4,200. What would you do with the $5,800? Where? Why? Why in a money market?
Interest.
Why?
More money.
For what?
Same.
For what?
Retirement.
For what are you going to retire to instead of retire from? People retire from things they hate. They retire from their employer, the things they hate. What are you going to retire to? What would you know? So again, I'll give you another little clue. Assign purpose to everything that you do and everything you have. Assign purpose to your dollars, your deeds, and your time. Okay, I'm kind of jumping around, but I think it's a good spot for it. What would you do if you're given $10,000? Got a guy pay off part of his truck, and he has $5,800, doesn't know what to do with the rest. Anyone else want the $10,000?
2 weeks
off. To do what?
Go fishing and hunting.
Okay, and so are you married? Is that okay with you? Do you have your cars paid off? Your bills paid off? Your house is paid off? Your house is paid off? Okay, your house is paid off. So he wants to go take a couple weeks. That's fine. I don't care what you do with the money. Okay, next one would be, third one, what would you do if you're given? Okay, get ready. $100,000. I'm writing checks for $100,000 today. What would you do with it? Pay off your house. How much do you own your house? Just how much? Would anyone pay off their credit cards with $100,000? Would anyone pay off your car? She's helping kids. Okay, here, I'm going to hold that thought. I'll come back to that. Don't let me forget that one. Anyone pay off cars? What? Student loans. Get rid of student loans? With $100,000. If you give $100,000, we assign purpose to that $100,000. So would you save any? Would you do anything with it? And see, she made a very interesting comment, and this is, she said what? Help her kids. Here's a question you need to ask when it comes to children and family. Is if I give them money, will I interrupt a lesson God is trying to teach them? Or will I complete it? If this money completes the assignment, no way, I'd get it there quickly. If it's going to interrupt the lesson and create an enabler, you need to run away and say, I cannot get between my child's lesson and their creator. I just saved you guys like a lot of... That one's a big one.
I wouldn't give them the money. I would pay off stuff.
And see, that is what the question is. She said she'd pay off stuff. And the thing is, would that interrupt the lesson God has created? Because once you're not here, what would happen to them? Who are they going to be dependent upon? Okay, the fourth question on it, big drum roll. What would you do if you were given $1 million today, right now? What would you do with it? Can you retire to what? Would you pay off your house? Would you pay off your car?
I'd give half of it to the church.
You'd give half the church. Why? Assign purpose to it. What ministries? Who would you trust with this money? So you've already given your tithe on it of $100,000. So we're going to give him $600,000. I mean, I don't care what you do with your money because it's your money, right? So what'd you do with $1 million? Can you tell me right now what you do with $1 million? She would smile. That'd make her happy.
I don't know. That's why I'm here. So you
can tell me. Okay. I'm taking you down a path. And here's the next question. What would you do if I gave you $10 million today? What would you do with it? Pardon? Invest in other people. That is a brilliant answer. I love that answer. What are the criteria to be invested in? What criteria? What character traits? What are you looking for? So that's a $10 million. Create jobs doing what?
Like, don't just spend it, but invest it in some type of a business where other people can then work.
Okay, what business would that be? What are they building next door? They look like seats.
Hockey.
Okay, I saw it. So that looks like a seating stadium thing. Didn't get very far. Did it get cold or just die? Oh, it's been dead a long time. So $10 million. What would you do with $10 million? Is that enough to make you feel secure? Is that enough to make you say, well, if we had $10 million in September, in October you'd have $6 million, $6.5 million. So what would you do with the money? If it was in the market or not? And the last question is, what would you do if you're given $100 million? You say, well, that's crazy. There's a bond boy named LeBron James that signed a $100 million contract when he turned 18. There's a little boy named some Phelps boy that smoked some dope this week. He had $100 million of endorsements at 23 years old and then goes and smokes on a stupid bong. He should have, he's just lost his Kellogg's contract. He probably cost him $30, $40, $50, $80, $100 million. So what would you do with $100 million? What would you do with it? You don't know. See, when most people win the lottery, most people end up in bankruptcy or worse off. See, money makes good people better and bad people worse.
It does not buy you happiness.
Money does not buy you happiness. It can give you a lot of fun things to do. But what I've discovered in all the years I've done this, somewhere between $1,000 and $300,000, and it's always the same way. It's all about me and taking care of my stuff. You guys did the same thing. The first $300,000 would take care of most of your yuck. And then $1 million is where you start thinking about giving to other people and doing other things. And then suddenly you start getting closer to your purpose. And again, I'm trying to speed through this because I'm supposed to be taking a break pretty quick on here. But the thing on, if you ask yourself this question and then can you show me the plan and start moving forward towards it on it, it changes the dynamic of who you are and what you're doing. And it's, again, logically, emotionally, spiritually, relationally, what is the impact of it on there? Okay, the Solomon drill. I love the Solomon drill on here because it opens the door to your purpose and passion. For me to mentor young men, to mentor people, I love mentoring people. I love teaching. I love writing. I love doing that stuff. I get so busy making a living, I forget to do the things that I'm gifted in. On here, I was trying to get people to move forward. I had some people. I had one lady that I helped her. She's retiring from the state, and she's buying a 6-bedroom house. And I go, what are you crazy? What are you crazy woman? What are you doing? You're retiring buying a crazy, Well, all of her life she wanted to raise young women and she could become a foster mom and she could make it like $10,000-$12,000 a month is bringing in foster kids on here and then mentor these kids and they need a bedroom for each one. Oh, I like that. She now has purpose in her life. Never been married, probably never get married, but loves kids. Loves helping women, girls. On there. So there's again, it's not about the money. It's about giving you, assigning purpose to your life, assigning purpose to your deeds, assigning purpose to your time, assigning purpose to your energy. When we look at this, the whole room changed from the fear of loss moved out the door when I start talking about the hope of the future. Did you catch that? So we got to quit looking through life. We're looking through the river mirror, looking at life, and we're saying, how can we live? It's not a good way to live. Next slide. On here. This fear of loss on here. The personal lifeline, if you draw a straight line on your thing, put your date of birth, and then put on whatever your age is today on that line, and then hopefully we live a little bit longer than this weekend on here. The thing on this choice side of it, and I don't have my laser pointer, I just realized. I'm going to be 50 this year, so this lifeline on here, everything that's positive in your life that you appear to be positive, put above the line. Everything that's negative, put below the line. Okay? When we take our 10-minute break, I'd like you to do this one thing. So what I discovered is the things that were underneath the line were actually defining factors in my character building. My mom died. That was a horrible thing. 1996, October 8th, 1996. She passed away. Well, it turned out to be a wonderful thing because she went from being an ornery old lady the last 24, 48 hours of life, she gave her life to the Lord. I mean, really gave her life, Lord, instead of living that facade of pleasing everyone else and pleasing the church and pleasing everything. She literally gave her life to God in the last 48 hours of life. She made up with my brother, who they hate each other for 10 years. They wasted a third of their life mad and fighting, and they literally, so that bad thing turned into a defining, changing, good thing. So you'll find that all those bad things that you perceive, like where we're at right now today, loss of jobs, lost world going down the toilet, you know, what county am I in, St. Clair? Sure, all the jobs being lost and going over to Canada or whatever on here is going to be turning what could become the greatest opportunity for you in your life. Okay? And the choice is, are we going to move forward into our future, move through where we're at to our future, or stay looking backwards? Okay, next slide. And we're going to take a break in just a couple minutes. There's three sections. You know, this is what do you want section, and there's some laws. And the first law of justification is people make decisions emotionally and defend them logically, emotionally, spiritually, relationally. And the second law, it's called the law of the step back, or what I call the law of pause. If you could go through life and just pause when you come into a challenge or a difficult situation, you just pause it and say, where am I at? You pause it and you step back. And Alexander the Great did this, and he conquered the world. He would reframe everything he did three different ways. He'd look at it from three different angles, and he conquered and did things that were unbelievable. So what I do in the step back provision, if I'm sitting down here like this and I run into a challenge, and I have to say I have been absolutely guilty, horrible of this, because my world was shattered when I was betrayed by some people that we thought we loved and were our friends. Just shattered, devastated. This is the first time that I've taught in 2 years in a church because of the pain that was inflicted. And I have not been able to do this for all 2 years of my life. And the reason I came here is 3 hours away from where I'm at, basically 2.5 hours. And there's sometimes you walk around the community and you think, what is wrong with these people? You run into them, because I'm like, in Lansing, I can't go anywhere without knowing people. I've been around the block, and I used to teach 3 times a week throughout all of Central Michigan, and so I run into people I know all the time. So if you came over here, I wouldn't run into people I know. And then my sister, I ran into her. It's like, it's horrible. But what I do on this thing on here is I'd go say, Lord, I don't know how to take this. I just cannot take the situation. I cannot take the lies, betrayals, and the things I'm going through right now. If you knew what I was going through right now, you'd think, I mean, falsely accused of stuff on here, had to hire attorneys to go battle them, you know, corporate disaster, just unbelievable, you know, just unbelievable things. You live a life of integrity and purpose and honor. Those words matter. They matter. It may not matter to corporate America. It may not matter to your neighbor. It may not matter to that person you sat next to in church that just is waiting for you to fall because their heart's not right with God. But it matters. Character matters. Purpose matters. Love matters. People matter. Heartbeats matter. This is what I would do on here, is I would literally stand up where I'm at, and I'd step back like this and say, Jesus, I can't take it. Step between me and this situation. I cannot take it anymore. Give me the wisdom to move forward. I live my life like that for most of my life, my adult life. And if you can learn that principle, because there is a creator, there is a creation, there is an assigned purpose that is stamped on your heart. And mine is to teach and write and to change people's lives, to give them hope and direction in a hopeless and frustrated and sinful world. I'm supposed to give people, I use tools as a finance to help people because that's where they're messed up the most. And I want to separate them and understand how to live godly, that this is a great time of honor for God. So where you're at, you're losing your job, you're not sure about your step back, say, God, where do you want me to get? Is my assignment almost done where I'm at? You need to set between me and my problem because I can't take any more. See, I tell you, I grew up with the guys I hung around. We used to curse a lot, but we get around women and adults. We didn't curse. Locker room talk, it was just foul mouth. What it was, okay. I hadn't cursed in years. Well, that last few years, I've been madder than mad. So, I mean, I actually swore. Can you believe that? I swore. I shook my fist at God. I shook a couple of fingers at some people I didn't like. You know, because I have a warring spirit inside. If you're in the financial, if you're in the world where I'm at, which is the pressure point of eternity, I mean, there you got to be tough. And I want you to be tough in the right way. So with that, very important principles that if you left here this morning on this first Wednesday, I don't like who you are, is that's fine. That's absolutely, you can take these two. We got two more sessions we're going to finish up on. Go ahead and go to the next slide, and this next slide I'll just leave up there. So you can just leave that and read it. But on the lifeline on it, look at what's good and bad, and I think it'll give you perspective. So with that, I'm going to go get prepared for my mix. We'll be back at 10:10.
Yep. Okay? And what we're